If Reality Check Radio enriches your day and life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
Dean Rabbage is a fifth-generation sheep, beef, and dairy farmer at Glenham, Southland. He operates his farm with his wife, Sarah, three young children as well. And you probably won't be surprised to hear, because if you've been listening to us, we've talked about kind of these cases before, more recently, very recently, Mark Robinson from around Auckland objecting to a wind farm there. And same thing is happening in Dean Rabbage's part of the world. Dean, thanks for coming on RCR.
No worries, Paul. Thanks for having us.
Okay, describe where you are. It's West Catlins, is it? Is that the sort of the area that we're talking about?
Yeah, that's probably a fair description. Our farm is a very western point of the Catlins Bush Conservation Park. So from the top of the hill, most days we get a stunning view of Stewart Island right out around the whole of Southland, out to the Takatimus, Hokanui's, and across the South Otago. So we get a pretty stunning vista from where we are. We're pretty fortunate to be doing what we're doing where we are.
Yeah, I'd say that. It's been a while since I've been to that part of the world, but it is beautiful. There's no doubt about it. And it doesn't really matter what the day's like. It's always good. So I'm just imagining it now. Okay, so where do we start? Family's been there for ages. Okay, so you didn't come down in the last in the last shower, so to speak. And over those generations, many years have passed by. So what are you facing right now?
Right. So Slopedown is an outstanding natural landscape feature of our area, which many people in our community regard as their maunga, our mountain, pretty much. It's an iconic landscape that can be seen from all over Southland out to Favo Strait. As I alluded to before, South Otago, West Otago, Eastern Southland. You can pretty much see the iconic slope down hill from all over Southland. And Contact Energy have managed to wrangle a fast-track consent process, successfully applied for it and was granted by the former Minister David Parker, to apply for a consent to build 55 220 metre tall wind turbines on the skyline.
How tall?
220 metres. So for a bit of context, wow. That's the observation deck on the Auckland Sky Tower. And I mean, it's not as though they're going to be, these are on the skyline of an already pronounced hill feature of our province. So I think the highest point off the top of my head, it's going to be close to 750 metres above sea level when the tower's up. So it's getting up there, and there's going to be no escaping them. And during the day or night, because due to the height of them, they're going to have a Christmas tree worth of light, flashing lights at night for the Civil Aviation Authority as well. So it's just, you're not going to be able to escape them regardless of where you are in Southland, pretty much.
So there's no thought here for any of the aesthetics, the landscape, the meaning of what that is to people. That doesn't matter.
No, apparently not. The Southland District Council has recently completed a survey, which is ironically more aimed at large-scale production and carbon forestry about protecting outstanding natural landscapes. But according to them, when it comes to projects of national significance like this wind farm is, that seems to be thrown out the window and becomes irrelevant. So, there's lots of different strings attached to this one, that's for sure.
David Parker's involvement, because that's he's from, well, not that specific area, but that part of the country. And what was it down to him to allow that fast track consent, was it?
Yeah, well, basically it was almost one of the last things that they did in power was approve the fast track consent process for Contact. Now, to be fair, the fast track consent process doesn't restrict or minimize the environmental implications of the project. It just removes a few of the steps as far as public consultation goes. So the only people that are now allowed to to be fair, support or are against the project are either local body, well, the council, iwi, adjoining and adjoining landowners. The wider community has been removed from the process altogether, and they're the ones that are going to be affected by it the most, such as ourselves.
Yeah, so, I mean, because everybody looks, everyone's got eyes, everyone can look, right? Okay, so that limits that. So I believe the investment is in the 700 to 900 million ballpark. You have to sell a lot of power over a long time to make that sort of money. Isn't hydro fully available in that part of the country anyway? I mean, I guess I'm wondering if this is even necessary.
Yeah, well, that's the question that we're all asking too. Like, so obviously, there's a big decarbonisation project going on down here with. We've got a significant Fonterra dairy factory close by. We've got two large meat processing plants in the third in South Otago of Finnegan. But they're all decarbonising on the back of government subsidies as well. So whether this would be happening if those subsidies weren't being given by the government. But again, we keep being told the power is needed down here for industry. But all the transmission lines that are being built in association with wind farm are heading north, ironically. So, a recent paper released by Great South, which is sort of an appointed board down here, I suppose it's sort of to spark and initiate business and help business development and stuff. Them, along with iwi, electrical companies, industry, and district council, released a draft plan saying that four of the key concerns for Southland's future is food security, flood protection, water storage, and power generation. So I would have thought that those four elements will lead to hydro on some of these outstanding valleys that are ironically getting planted in trees also. So, it's very frustrating. I don't think we have the population. Well, we don't have a population down here. We've only got 2% of the country's population, so you can't help but feel that is why they're choosing these areas to put these wind farms in sort of areas of least resistance.
Yeah, and they'll be selling the power out of the area. That's obviously,
If you wouldn't see this sort of development being proposed in the likes of Queenstown and Wanaka and Auckland, where ironically the power is needed the most, would you?
No, because people would well-connected people would kick up a big fuss, because well-connected people have paid a lot of money to have property and lifestyle.
Well, Wanaka can't even get a McDonald's across the line because of the stink it's kicked up. So
that might improve their health. Yeah. Okay. So what's the engagement been like with Contact Energy and the other entities like iwi, et cetera, that you mentioned? Whose side? Who's on what side? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, it's very hard to distinguish who's on what side, to be honest with you, Paul. Contact have been very limited with their consultation. I can't help but feel it's been nothing but a token gesture to tick the requirements for the consent process. There's been two or three drop-in sessions at Wyndham, but that's as far as the consultation's got. We were meant to be having a meeting with Contact tonight in Wyndham, a public meeting, but they bailed on us this morning, basically because I think they realised that they're losing control of the narrative. There's going to be a few more people there that made them feel comfortable, and they've pulled pin on it.
That's so woke. That's woke behaviour. That's the I refuse to debate. You disagree with me, so we just don't debate. Sorry. Yeah.
Yep. So the first initial consultation sessions, you actually had to, it was almost like booking tickets to a music concert. You had to go into an event finder and book tickets in a time slot. And so they controlled it very well. So there was never, the Contact staff always outnumbered the people that were actually there to find out information. And that's going to turn a lot of people away from actually going to the consultation period, because it's quite intimidating if you turn up there by yourself and the seven or eight Contact staff there with all their correct versions or answers. So,
yeah, well, they've all been trained up. They've gone through every scenario of every question, from hostile engagement through to not so tough. And so they know what to meet. None of them will be from your area, though, will they?
No, exactly. They all drive down and head away back home at night to their homes that aren't going to be affected at all. They get their probably triple figure salary and tick the box and don't even worry about it. So, in the last 6 months, these guys have come down here and have ruined what we've had to grow up in, and the privilege of living in an area like this for the last six generations. They've ruined it in 6 months, or potentially going to ruin it in 6 months for just a pretty devastating effect.
There's a perception, isn't there, that if you're not like Tonga Te Whenua, that you can't kind of feel a connection with the land and the sort of the power of the land. But I imagine over five generations.
Yeah, exactly. We regard ourselves as Tonga Te Whenua. Like, we've been very fortunate enough to be on our property for almost 135 years. And, wow. and it's a real privilege. And we put a huge emphasis on our farming operation to always be enhancing the environment and mitigating any effects that we do. So, it's pretty frustrating, all right, when you don't get the same respect that other certain sectors of society do.
I was going to ask you about that respect. So is there... in the sort of like the how would you say it? The dynamic, the power dynamic of this, do you think you, the farmer, or the farming community is looked upon, because we know what the woke brigade say and think about traditional farming, you know, it's, I've spoken to many farmers who feel like they're under attack, put it that way, that their lifestyle and the way of doing things is kind of, there's pressure on it. And I suppose it's easy to argue to someone who doesn't think too deeply that if you're putting in this sort of power generation, that it is environmentally friendly, you know. So you're just the stick in the mud, old thinking farmer. We're the people here saving the climate, but we have to go through this process. But we're not going to listen to you because we've already made up our minds. I'm just trying to get an idea of the sort of the mindset.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think a lot of people down here feel as though we're just being treated as collateral damage. Like I said earlier, like with 2% of the population, we're pretty thin and sparsely spread on the ground here. So you talk to Contact about what they're doing to mitigate the environment and protect it, because obviously there's going to be a fair bit of impact on flora and fauna with the development of these wind farms. And they're very quick to tell you about all the studies they've done, the money they've spent, and how they're going to, what they're going to do, and how the environment around the wind farm will actually be better off than when they started.
How could it be better?
Yeah, exactly. But then the next sentence you follow up with is, so what are you doing for the community, the people that live in the community, the anxiety, the mental stress, the division that you're creating by developing these wind farms? And you just get a blank look. And the first quote I got was, "We're sorry you feel that way."
They never thought about it. It never occurred to them.
And so I've since found out that the $1,000 donation was made to the Rural Support Trust to help with some, just a token gesture. So that's how they value us, is a $1,000 donation at the moment. So it's the whole process being excluded from the consent process. It's just a real insult to our community.
Yeah. So that you actually could, well, it, I think you explained it, the limited number of people have input, right, is what you said.
Yeah, there's 35 adjoining landowners to the areas that the wind farm's been proposed on, and then obviously iwi and district council.
Do you know what iwi are thinking? Do you know what the
I don't know. We've got a group called the West Catlins Preservation Society that successfully shut down a proposed wind farm on the same site 15 years ago. So a few of those members with iwi ties have been in consultation with them. So, but from what we gather, all those groups are very much on the fence, councils and stuff in the meantime. So,
about the councils? Yeah. Because you'd expect them to be really, that's local as you get.
Yeah, so we went and presented to the Southland District Council at their last public forum, or at their council meeting. We were met with mixed responses. Obviously, there were many councillors there who were vocally against it and supported us. But then when you're listening to the rest of the meeting, there's other councillors there that are equally in favour of it as well. who find pine trees more offensive than turbines. And I don't like either, to be fair. But yeah,
that's a weird thing, isn't it? It's like it's even better than something organic. Is that because people, I mean, don't want to use the word brainwash, but okay, let's use that word. Anything that they've been told so repeatedly that this is kind of a virtuous thing that they just can't get out of that thinking. Is that what you see?
Yeah. I'd almost say that some have been indoctrinated by the process and the council. Yeah. They keep going on about tourism in Southland, and it'll be the death of tourism in Southland if this goes ahead, because the precedent it'll set, and the council gains a massive revenue from tourism. But we've got to remember that New Zealand produces 0.17% of total global emissions, and we're prepared to effectively cut off our nose and spite our face to meet requirements and international expectation. Like, I would have thought that getting a 30% reduction of China's 30% of total emissions would be much more effective in the bigger picture than reducing air 0.17 by 30%.
And don't wreck the landscape.
Exactly. Like, we're all for decarbonisation, and we all want to do better, and we will do better, but at what cost? There has to be some common sense and practicality because we are just simply ruining our landscape. As much as we like to say, their clean green image will be tarnished by this, even in the name of green energy. The local wind farm.
But is it green? That's the thing.
Yeah, I have my doubts. I really do, because at the moment they can't say that they've got a sustainable way to recycle the blades after 30 years. Like, you look all around the world, in Germany and Australia, they're taking wind farms down and just burying them in the soil. That can't be good for. They're just going to bleed into the aquifers and water ecosystem for generations to come.
And there's multiple. It's the same thing with Waiuku. Up north, I think, tens of thousands of diesel truck movements in the construction and the moving of soil and things like that. So, okay, so what do you have to do to, I'll use the word scupper it, to take it out?
I know. It's going to be a really tough one. We've been liaising with lots of fish and game, forest and bird, because they do have some capital when it comes to the EPA, who will eventually sign off yes or no on this thing. We're also just trying to make it more aware, make the wider community more aware, and just create more and more resistance as we can, because the consultation, like I said earlier, hasn't gone beyond the local town, beyond Wyndham. So people 20 minutes away do not, some of them don't even know it's happening, and they're going to be able to get a great view of it as well. So, just try and get some common sense into it.
I can imagine there's a bit of tension, is there? There's a bit of tension there.
Yeah, it is. It's a very emotive process. There's been a lot of people in the community spending a lot of emotional capital on this, and it is starting to wear a lot of people down. The recently commissioned Kawira Wind Farm, you may have seen, it's visible from our place now, and it's the lights at night, which has created more tension and stress for people than the actual physical presence during the day. But that wind farm has been going for 6 months now, and there's farms in the area who are now on the market because they can no longer farm where they historically farmed because of the presence of the turbines. So what's that doing to our land values also?
Yeah.
There's bigger stuff than that.
Well, yeah, if you walk off, we get the land cheap for more turbines.
I've told Contact that I've got morals and principles, so that'll never happen. Yeah. But it was horrendous to see the Gore Mayor Ben Bauer say it made Gore look like a modern town. Because we've got so many fantastic feature hills around this province, and the feature hills are now being lost because the new feature is the turbines, and that's just totally unacceptable.
Well, I'm in Wellington, and there's a wind farm out towards Makara, right? And people who fly into Wellington, you'll see it. You pass it; it's on your left as if you're heading down round to do the turn over the strait, coming from the south into the north. And I've been out there quite a bit. One thing I notice: the constant turning of the blades is a visual pollution. It's annoying. It's like white noise in your vision after a while. And it's never stops. They are always moving. Now, one or two is okay, but when you've got dozens and dozens, it's not pleasant, is my personal opinion, and I've experienced it. So,
well, at least the ones in Wellington are constantly turning. The ones that I can see on the Kiwira, one farm, there's 10 of them there. They can go two or three days in a row without turning.
What's the point of that?
Either because there's no wind or the wind's too strong. But you look at the Transpower website on a daily basis and it breaks down where all of New Zealand's power generation is coming from, and you very rarely see the wind generation operating at more than 20% capacity. So that tells me that they're inefficient. Coal's generally always operating at around 50% capacity. So building more turbines isn't increasing efficiency, it's just spreading inefficiency further.
So why do you think they're so obsessed?
Look, I don't know. I think they seem to be a form of green renewable energy, and everybody just wants to be seen to be doing the right thing. Like, I think New Zealand's already got a massive amount of renewable energy to a point where I'm pretty sure it's been well quoted that the closer you get to 100% renewable efficiency, the more costly and inefficient those renewable energy sources become. So,
well, there's one source, and that's nuclear, and that will inevitably happen. And which will render all these developments completely obsolete overnight.
I'd love us to put our big boy pants on and have a serious conversation about this, because the rest of the world is going that way. It is, whether you like it or not, the cleanest form of energy, and it's reliable and it'll meet all our demands. I think it's time we have a really serious discussion about it. But perhaps we'll get Greenpeace off the farmers' backs for a change and get them fighting something that they might actually believe in for a change.
Well, I mean, you can't, as I understand it, and looked a bit into this, that the modern nuclear technology is pretty well fail-safe now. It's not like Chernobyl or Fukushima anymore. Those days are gone. So we're in a different era of that. Okay, so there's a new government, Dean, and they're not as woke infected, let's say, as the last lot. Shane Jones is a very practical infrastructure guy. I know I've spoken to him. And Contact Energy, I take it, is still one of the ex-government power generation companies or distribution companies, probably still with about 50% shareholding there or maybe just over. So maybe it's time to go hard and, really try and get to the top and go hard.
Yeah, unfortunately, I was hoping that the change of government might have given the sector a bit more relief, but unfortunately, they've been making noises about increasing the rate of renewable build and the ease of which it can be constructed as well. So
that's the National Party, though. That's the National Party.
Yeah, so I'm not too sure about what's
going on. They don't have a government if the others don't agree.
Yeah, I've been talking to other MPs from across the other sides of the fence too, and they are very mum on the situation as well. So, but admittedly, that was during the coalition discussion process, so they may have a bit more of a backbone to stand on now.
Okay, well, I guess you just got to keep making a noise about it. This is one way of doing it, and get people. Plenty of people know that part of the country, and they can visualize what the difference that makes to the view or the feel of the landscape, and they won't like it.
We've got to remember that this is on the Catlin's boundary. This is part of the Catlin's. You'll see this from a lot of the Catlin's area, which is a disgrace that it's even been contemplated, really. They're just exploiting Southland's low population and climate, really.
Okay, well, interesting hearing what's happening there. What's the next move? Is there a next move?
We'd just like Contact to actually front up to a public meeting so that we can sort of get, I guess, to say power numbers and get them to front up, because they've been very selective in the answers to questions that we've asked. And we also need a public meeting to get a show of numbers so that local councillors and both of the district council and Environment Southland can actually understand the movement of discontent around the wind farms proposal.
Okay, well, they do seem to respond to lots of emails and stuff like that. If you get a tsunami of that stuff coming in, they kind of realize what they may be up against. If they don't have that, well, you know.
Yeah. So we do have a petition gun. It's slowly gaining pace. It's on change.org. Just punch and slope down and you'll find that. And we actually had a local, a bit of a poll, not that scientific, but the Wyndham show, the local AMP show on the weekend, they had 160 people voted and 79% of them were against the proposed one.
Yeah. Farm. Yeah, we so hear that a lot, but that doesn't seem to make much of a difference to a lot of
folks. No, it's not, but it's a pretty good indicator of how the local community feels about it, really.
And just talking about nuclear there just a moment ago, really we can say, I think, can't we, that, you know, wind power like that, it's sort of old tech, you know?
Yep, and it's not built with a squeaky clean footprint. Like there's millions, thousands of tons of concrete going, copper, steel, all, like I said, all the transportation to get into it. All the oil required in the gearboxes and fiberglass blades, which have got a maybe 25 max lifespan, which they can't find a good way to recycle.
Well, there's no way of recycling it.
No. So, I think it's a bit of token gesture, really.
Well, let's keep in touch and see what happens. Dean Rabbage, thanks for coming on RCR and explaining that.
No, thanks, Paul. Thanks for the opportunity. And yeah, we'll be happy to talk again and keep up to date with any developments we have down this way.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057, that's 2057, or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.